This is Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. A group of New Hampshire's National Guard soldiers are in Eagle Pass, Texas, to assist with that state's border control efforts. The New Hampshire Bulletin's Anne-Marie Timmons has been reporting from the southern border this week, and she joins us now to talk about what she's been seeing. Good morning, Anne-Marie.
Good morning, Rick.
What were some of your first impressions on arrival at the southern border in Texas this week?
I would not have known I was at the so-called epicenter of the border crisis, you know, had I not gone down to the river, where state and federal law enforcement have really taken over the bank of the Rio Grande. But otherwise, it's just a normal town, you know, picture big box sprawl of Nashua, up against a downtown where you can get Western wear or a bank loan on the same block. So it's just really a town of life going on as usual. The only sign of military I saw, you know, beyond the bank was two soldiers getting coffee at Starbucks. I mean, it really is otherwise a very typical small city.
Let's talk more about the mission assigned to the soldiers that are there in Eagle Pass, Anne-Marie. What kind of support are they lending to the state of Texas?
Really a nighttime eyes and ears mission for Texas. They turn away migrants crossing illegally. They flag cuts to the fence. They notify Texas when someone gets through. What I didn't expect is really the amount of constant mental vigilance that takes. You know, they're always scanning the other border in Mexico and the river. You know, does that pickup truck crawling the Mexican border at 9 p.m. mean anything? What about the fisherman has moved three times? What about the house that has a party every night with flashlights scanning the area? What does that mean? So it's constantly taking in information and logging it just to be prepared for anything. So that really surprised me.
And these soldiers, again, they don't have the power to arrest anyone, to apprehend anyone.
They don't. They're really reporting incidents. When, you know, migrants came up last night from Peru, there were five of them. A few made it up to the fence and they were talking with them. They said, did someone bring you across? You know, you need to go to the legal port of entry. They said what's frustrating is that they really can't do anything until someone crosses the fence other than tell them to go to a legal port of entry. And if someone does come in through the fence, they notify Texas authorities who step in. You know, what the soldiers will say is we're not here to judge what we see. We're not here to guess what they might do. We're really logging information so we can be ready to respond for whatever happens.
I know you attended a vigil this week on the Mexican side of the border. Who was there and what were they protesting?
It was a group called Witness at the Border. It's a pro-asylum group that has called on the U.S. to really welcome migrants, not deport them or separate them from their children. They feel that the Border Patrol policy, which does consider granting asylum as soon as someone touches U.S. soil, is very cruel. That's the word they use. They see Operation Lone Star, which New Hampshire is supporting, as extra cruel, was how they put it, because Texas authorities turn people away. They won't let them in even once they touch American soil. So they were on the other side of the river looking over at Texas and local, you know, other state law enforcement with signs that says, you know, justice for immigrants. And they would call out if they saw, you know, someone crossing and being turned away. They would call out to that group, offer them support, and really call on law enforcement to let them in. You know, one group they saw, they said, you know, it was a woman pregnant enough that her T-shirt could not cover her stomach. And she had a small boy with her, and they just sent her upriver to the legal entry point. And so they're seeing it very much from a human point of view of people in need, and they're upset that Texas is turning them away.
Anne-Marie, what questions do you have as you continue to follow this story? What questions are you trying to answer while you are down reporting from Eagle Pass?
I think the main reason I wanted to come down here was to see what this very polarizing political fight everywhere else in the country looks like on the ground. So I really want to see, you know, how are they separating politics from their mission? What do they think about? How do they tune that out? You know, the way they talk about it is very much like a job. We were here to do this job. We were sent to hospitals during COVID to do that job. So they see it really as a mission and a job. And it's just so different than the conversations we have at home. So I'm curious to see how they just separate that out and how what they think about that.
New Hampshire Bulletin's Emery Timmins. Emery, thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
You can find more of her reporting at newhampshirebulletin.com. A joint investigation from NHPR and APM Reports has found that New Hampshire's Education Commissioner, Frank Edelblue, has used his office repeatedly to elevate conservative complaints against the education system. That is despite his pledge to keep the job, quote, nonpartisan, when he took over in 2017. NHPR's Sarah Gibson joined me to share her reporting. Sarah, you've been covering the commissioner for a while. What new information did you uncover in this reporting?
Yeah, I had been hearing about his approach for a number of years, but we wanted to dig in and verify what the commissioner and the department under his tenure are really doing and how that's impacting schools. So we talked to dozens of people, reviewed hundreds of pages of public records, and found, you know, there's not one single event. It's really a series of communications, like the commissioner questioning whether it's appropriate for students to read a book that features a family with two moms, whether it was appropriate to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day, or for students to learn about they-them pronouns. And taken together, it's a posture that's unusual for the State Department of Education to take.
Well, what role would the commissioner usually play?
Yeah, so his department does have some pretty important oversight roles. They initiate investigations into potential wrongdoing by teachers, for instance, and they can revoke licenses if needed. But what we've seen is that Commissioner Edelblue really brings a kind of customer service mindset to the role. I mean, he sees himself as a troubleshooter on behalf of parents. So when he gets a call or a text, which he does often, he gets on the phone and he often elevates those concerns to school leaders or in public forums. And I spoke to one longtime superintendent who basically said, you know, it's kind of like a lot of politicians. Commissioner Edelblue seems to want more influence than he has power, because a lot of the concerns that he's fielding are about issues that he actually doesn't have much control over at all. So curriculum, LGBTQ inclusion policies, books, that's really up to locally elected school board members and school admin. You know, that's New Hampshire's tradition of local control.
Now, one of the examples that you uncovered of the commissioner getting into these issues that have usually been reserved for these local school boards was a meeting that he convened in 2023. What did you find out about that?
Yeah, I had been hearing about this meeting for a while, but people were reluctant to talk because I was told that the commissioner made it clear to those invited that it was confidential. So eventually I learned he'd asked some school librarians, some parent activists, and a lawmaker to meet for a working group on explicit materials. I got a copy of the documents that were handed out at the meeting. It includes excerpts of the state's obscenity laws, excerpts from frequently challenged books. Every single paper is stamped confidential. And one of the librarians who attended was Stephanie Charlefort. She and others said the commissioner raised questions about what steps the state, he and the attorney general's office, could take to remove some of these books, to remove books that were deemed too obscene. And she says she walked out of that meeting in total shock and feeling attacked.
This is my life. This is my passion. And now you're telling me I can't do it and I'm not doing a good job because I happen to put a book in my collection that may not align with your religion or your social beliefs, but it does with other students in my school.
We also spoke with Representative John Sellers of Bristol. He was also at the meeting and he saw it differently. I mean, he basically said it was a standoff and that the commissioner was unable to get to a compromise.
His librarians came across as, I don't want to say combative, but they weren't pleased that the commissioner was even thinking about looking at these books or maybe having them removed if he could, because they thought everybody should have an access to the book no matter what.
So, Sarah, was this an isolated incident?
No, we have documented years of scrutiny by the commissioner on specific books. And I should say, in general, some of these are books that educators I spoke to say have been received pretty well. In some cases, they were used really intentionally to ensure that LGBTQ students and students of color saw themselves and their experiences reflected in school material. But with these complaints to the DOE, some of these books sparked allegations of teacher misconduct.
Now, how did the state handle those allegations?
So just to back up for a minute, the same person who's looking into complaints about school books, posters, curriculum, also handles investigations into extremely serious allegations like sexual or physical assault of students. And we try to get a better sense of how the department is triaging those investigations, like how they're deciding what merits consideration and an inquiry. But we have not gotten clear answers to specific questions about that. What we did learn is that on a number of occasions, the state's misconduct investigator contacted schools about things like a display about banned books, a field trip to learn about Black activists, and sometimes his inquiries were at the behest of Commissioner Etta Blue. That didn't necessarily mean that there was a formal investigation into the teacher, but educators on the receiving end say, you know, this pattern of inquiry has a chilling effect on them.
I imagine some people listening might think, well, isn't it the commissioner's job to bring concerns to light? You know, what's the problem?
Sure. You know, I think his willingness to field complaints has made him a champion for parents or taxpayers who feel like their schools do not align with their values, who say that their concerns at the school board meetings are ignored. So they go straight to the top. And some have even said, you know, we're in New Hampshire in this climate of A, declining enrollment in public schools, and B, expanding school choice. And so one can see the commissioner potentially as helping public schools be more responsive to families and actually make them feel heard so that they don't withdraw their kids and leave for another school. I wanted to talk to Commissioner Etta Blue about all of this, but his office did not agree to an interview. They didn't respond either to detailed questions about the situations that we reported on. However, a spokesperson said in a statement that the commissioner takes all constituent concerns seriously, works to handle complaints swiftly and fairly. And we've included their full statement on our website in the story.
Sarah, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Etta Blue published an op-ed on the Department of Education's website in response to the investigation. There he wrote, quote, "When I assumed this role in 2017, I committed to being 100% focused on the children. Thank God someone is looking out for the children." He also listed examples of parent complaints he's responded to, including an allegation that a teacher had helped a student get an abortion. The Department of Education has not provided any additional information to substantiate that claim. You can read Sarah's full story in partnership with APM Reports on nhpr.org. You'll be here next Friday with more top headlines. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.